Radio Prague News.
The Minister of Culture, Helena Čestíková, has resigned from her post. A former minister is sentenced to 5 years in jail. And heavy snowfall causes chaos across the country. Minister of Culture, Helena Čestíková, has resigned from her post just days after taking office. Ms. Čestíková announced her resignation in a letter to Czech television. She had previously stated that she was unhappy at being pressurised by Civic Democrat Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek to appoint a deputy of his choosing. Filmmaker Ms. Čestíková had been nominated as Minister of Culture by the Christian Democrats, one of the smaller coalition parties in the new administration. Vladimír Mlynář, the former IT minister, has been sentenced by Prague City Court to 5.5 years in jail for abusing his position as a public official and misusing state funds. The former Freedom Union minister was found guilty of using Testcom, an internet portal company subsidised and supervised by the state, to fund a private company of a similar name. In October 2003, he earmarked 7.5 million crowns from Testcom's budget for this purpose. Mr. Mlynář has appealed the decision. Heavy snow in the Czech Republic has caused transport chaos around the country. Traffic along the main highway from Prague to Brno was paralysed for hours following a collision between two trucks in the early hours of the morning, and many of the country's smaller roads are impassable. Prague's Ruzyně Airport has had to cancel all flights and will remain closed for most of the day. Meanwhile, the inclement weather has already claimed one victim. On Wednesday afternoon, a 30-year-old man died in the Moravian city of Ostrava when he lost control of his car on a slippy road and crashed into an oncoming truck. Meteorologists predict that it will continue snowing across the country until the weekend and that the snow could be up to 0.5 metre deep in some areas. The Czech Security Council has given the green light to opening negotiations with the United States on placing part of a US missile defence system in the Czech Republic. Last Friday, Washington officially requested that talks begin on placing a radar station on Czech territory as part of a new US anti-missile defence system. President Václav Klaus says he is also in favour of beginning negotiations with the US on the proposed project. President Klaus added that he would be discussing the US missile defence system with Russian President Vladimir Putin during his planned visit to Moscow in April. Russia has indicated that it would view the construction of the system as a threat to its security. I'm Colin O'Connor and that's the end of the news. You can find these stories and more on our website at www.radio.cz.
Hello, this is Radio Prague and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, does a new Czech government spell a new foreign policy? A Czech firm using asbestos in its thermal flasks comes under fire. World-famous photographer Jan Sadek gets his own gallery in Prague. And later we visit an eco-village where local people produce their own power. Stay tuned. With a new Czech government finally in office, the focus has moved from the country's political crisis to key foreign policy issues. In the coming months, the Czech leadership will have to decide whether to host a US radar base, react to moves to revive the EU constitution, and start preparing for the country's EU presidency in 2009. The government's foreign policy team is now bigger than ever, and on Tuesday, President Klaus invited three government ministers to Prague Castle for some foreign policy fine-tuning. Daniela Lazareva has the story.
After 8 years of left-wing administration, the Czech Republic has a centre-right government. Changes are expected on many fronts, but according to the new foreign minister, Karel Schwarzenberg, the change of guard should not significantly affect the country's foreign policy.
I will go on with the priorities already existing. Euro-Atlantic, European neighbourship policy, trying to build up the best relations with our neighbours, cooperation with the United States on one side and inside the European Union.
The outcome of Tuesday's meeting at Prague Castle seemed to confirm the foreign minister's words. Its participants, President Klaus, Prime Minister Topolánek, Deputy Prime Minister for European Affairs Alexander Vondra, and Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, all said there were no significant differences between them on key foreign policy issues. However, Petr Drulák from the Prague Institute for Foreign Affairs says that at no point in the past has Czech foreign policy been moulded by so many diverse politicians, and that coordinating their stance might present a problem.
I think it will be quite difficult for all these players to represent a coherent whole. I think it's quite encouraging that they met yesterday at Prague Castle and argued that there are no substantial differences between them. I understand it as a future commitment to a more coherent Czech foreign policy than we used to have in the past. But still, of course, one sees an inherent tension between the foreign ministry and the president, and possibly also between the president and the prime minister.
What about the country's foreign policy in view of its membership in the EU and its transatlantic ties? Could there be any discord there?
Well, so far we tried to have what I would call an internationalist foreign policy, paying an equal attention to both transatlantic relations, our relations with Washington, and our European relations, relations with Brussels and our key European allies. Quite frankly, I cannot imagine that this government would like to shift this. That's a sort of a long-term continuity in the Czech foreign policy. And even though the main party in the current government is more Atlanticist than in the previous government, its junior partners are actually quite Europe-oriented as well. So what are my expectation is that we will continue in this internationalist orientation.
But will the Czech Republic be able to maintain this balance? Because we've already heard some criticism from the EU that the Czech Republic is seriously considering hosting a U.S. missile defense base on its territory.
Well, I think that in case Czech Republic decided to host such a base, it would be to no detriment to any commitments within the European Union. We know that many EU members have actually much larger American bases on the territory, so I actually do not see as a clash with our EU commitments.
Petr Drulák of the Prague Institute for Foreign Affairs, ending that report by Daniela Lazarova. One of the Czech Republic's biggest makers of kitchenware, Tescoma, is currently suffering millions of crowns in losses. That's because the authorities in Italy have banned the sale of thermal flasks made by the firm. The Italians say the flasks are carcinogenic. Dita Asiedu reports.
The Tescoma company, based in the Moravian town of Zlín, keeps the contents of most of its flasks hot or cool with the help of asbestos pads that hold the insulation between two inner glass walls. A procedure that the company says is standard with most manufacturers. But last month, the Italian authorities pulled 9 Tescoma thermal containers off the market. They say asbestos fibers may be released if the internal glass container breaks and the asbestos board pads are handled. Thus, the flasks pose a dangerous threat to the consumer. But Tescoma refutes the claims. Almost all producers use the same amount of asbestos in their flasks, and there is no viable reason for the ban, says the company's Richard Kalup.
The vacuum flasks Tescoma are in all standards absolutely safe. This has been proven by the latest expertise of Czech national authorities. The whole affair seems to us to be more as an aspect of the competition on European markets. We will defend ourselves in this matter, and our legal department already requires explanation on Italian authorities.
The Italian authorities have issued a high-level warning to the EU's Rapid Alert System for Non-Food Products, known as RAPEX. As a preventive measure, Tescoma has pulled its flasks off the Czech market until the results of a full laboratory analysis are released. The Czech Commercial Inspection, which conducted the tests, has now confirmed that consumers have no cause for concern. The authority criticizes Italy's measure. The inspection's Peter Hassmann explains why.
They did not make a risk assessment procedure, which is a very important instrument We did such risk assessment procedure, and our result was that the risk is very low, so it's not necessary to take over any action in the RAPEX system. Regarding this, it seems to us that it could be a competitive instrument for repressing the competition in trade.
The Czech Health Institute has also been issuing statements that Czechs need not return their flasks. The Czech authorities will now propose to lower the warning level in the EU's RAPEX system. But it will be up to an investigation in Brussels to decide whether the Czech flasks really pose a cancer risk.
Now, when a Czech-American group gave a valuable piece of Manhattan real estate to the Czech Republic in 2001, it was expected that the building would be fully renovated by 2004. Instead, 6 years after the handover, construction work on the city's Bohemian National Hall, or Národní dům, is still incomplete. Frustrated with these delays, a representative of New York's Czech community is currently here in Prague for talks with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Ilya Maritz has more.
Josef Balaš is a man on a mission. The president of the Bohemian Benevolent and Literary Association came to Prague last week to find out why the rebuilding of Národní dům, or the Bohemian National Hall on Manhattan's swanky Upper East Side, is taking so long, and when it will be completed. After a meeting yesterday with government officials, he thinks he may have an answer.
I must say, yeah, we're frustrated, but I'm being promised that the construction will start within the next couple of months. And I want to believe that, and then I would estimate that probably the whole process will take about a year, and then it will be finally finished.
A 2008 completion date would put the restoration 4 years behind schedule. The cost has also more than doubled, from 350 million crowns in the year 2000 to an estimated 730 million crowns, or almost $34 million today. Margita Fuchsová, a former consul general of the Czech Republic in Los Angeles, is in charge of overseeing the reconstruction. She explains the delay.
The first reason was this. One must consider that we're building in the United States, in the city of New York, on the island of Manhattan. We've encountered many bureaucratic hurdles. And then, as the construction was beginning, we had the misfortune of having a storage vat of oil spill over about a third of the building. So there was a lot of legal wrangling after that.
When the Bohemian Benevolent and Literary Association accepted $1 as symbolic payment for the building, the members of the once thriving New York Czech community hoped that the government would be a better custodian of the building than the association itself was able to be.
The idea was that by working closely with the Czech government, could help us restore the building and really use it as a showcase for the Czech culture, for Czech history, obviously, and down the road representing business interests of the Czech Republic, etc.
Now, Balaš says, there is hope that Czechs, Americans, and Czech Americans will soon be able to properly appreciate this unusual edifice.
It's a very unique building. It's located on the Upper East Side in Manhattan. It's quite large, I must say. And I would dare to say also that there are not too many countries that own anything even close to that in Manhattan. It's probably the only building that has a Czech inscription on the facade of the building, Český národní dům.
That was Josef Balaš of the Bohemian Benevolent and Literary Association. A reminder, you're listening to Radio Prague.
Už nechci a nechci a nechci tak žít. Už nechci a nechci a nechci vás mít. Vás ženy, vás ženy.
The actor Jiří Langmeier takes the unusual approach of singing a tribute to photographer Jan Sadek at the official opening of the latter's new permanent gallery, a stone's throw from Prague's Old Town Square. It features over 100 works by the photographer, who is a remarkably youthful 71. I caught up with Jan Sadek briefly at the thronged opening and asked him why his own gallery.
Well, anyway, it's my gallery only by name. The gallery is the property of the company which holds my name, but it is not mine. But I am very pleased, extremely pleased, to have something I have never dreamed in all my life of, because it's very unusual to have a gallery and be still alive. I believe that I am still alive.
I'm sure you are. Here there are about 100 photographs on display. Are they all for sale, and are they in large series?
I didn't arrange this show anyway, but as I have seen, it seems to have some sense to me. I believe that the photographs, the prints, are each one should sell some story, and this is the show of single photographs.
And I see you have the titles in English. Have you always written titles in English?
Well, many years ago, my English was almost perfect. But within 35 years, I have lost all the knowledge which is natural. Originally, I made my diary in English because of secret police, because nobody of them could read it. You know, there were some for money, was bread or dough or something like that. And even now in the free country, I use still this nonsense, which is not necessary anymore, but I still sing the one simple melody for a long time, for the whole my life.
The new Jan Sadek Gallery is at number 9 Seletna Street, and you can find out more at sadek.com. Before our feature, I'd just like to tell you about a couple of international projects Radio Prague is involved in. We're regular contributors to Insight Central Europe, which alternates with our normal program every Saturday. You may not know, however, that we also collaborate on the program Network Europe. You can find that at networkeurope.org. But getting back to our own show today, Ilya Maritz takes us on a visit now to an unusual village in this edition of Spotlight.
A weekday afternoon in Knyazice, a village of about 500 inhabitants in central Bohemia. It's the very definition of a rural Czech community, with its Baroque church, low-slung 19th-century farm buildings, and a few ponds with ducks. In some places, the smell of coal hangs in the air. Many homes in this region were never hooked up to gas heat. And that's one reason why I've come here. Knyazice recently embarked on an experiment that makes this ordinary village one of the most remarkable communities in the Czech Republic. The town has decided to become energy independent, and I've come to see exactly how that works. I'm guided by Knyazice's bicycle riding mayor, Milan Kazda.
No, tak v podstatě byla to myšlenka, že bychom chtěli, aby jsme vlastně byli soběstační, protože to je takový nějaký.
The basic idea was this. We wanted to be self-sufficient. A return to our roots, really. People here always did stuff for themselves. They had horses, cows, pigs. We practically only started using coal maybe 50 years ago, and even then we used only a very small amount. Back then, villagers hardly needed electricity, just for a radio and 2 light bulbs. So we thought we'd try being self-sufficient ourselves.
We arrive at Knyazice's biomass station on the north end of town. It's a cluster of gleaming white aluminum-sided buildings. This complex cost 116 million crowns, or about $55 million, and was built by the Skanska company with funds from the European Union, regional government, and the town of Knyazice itself.
This building here is the lower installation, our biomass furnace. On the right, you can see a pile of wood chips, one of the ingredients of biomass, and then on the left, there are bales of hay. Some of it we prepare ourselves, but mostly it comes from nearby farmers, and we're happy to support them. Let's have a look inside the furnace. It's going to get really loud.
We enter the hollow shell of the plant and are confronted by a bewildering tangle of machinery and piping.
Here the guys are fixing the conveyor belt, which is always getting stuck with wood chips. Here's the hay furnace, and there's the furnace for wood chips. This device mixes it all up, ferments it, and then warm water is conducted to the community. Right now, the water being sent out is about 50 degrees, and it comes back 40 degrees. Not so hot, actually, because the furnace isn't on at the moment.
One of the advantages of biomass technology is that it produces warm water as a byproduct. Many houses in Knežice already get their heating that way. Also, the process creates little or no new greenhouse gases, since the carbon released by burning plant matter, like hay and tree bark, was itself only recently captured from the atmosphere by those same organisms. As we walk to the biofuel station, where septic waste and restaurant leftovers are turned into liquid gas, Merkazda runs through some of the numbers with me.
Co my tady vyrobíme, by mělo zhruba stačit pro tu naši obec, jsou to samozřejmě řádové odhady.
The power we create should just about meet the needs of our community. We have 148 sites connected. Since December, 94% of residents who live here all year have been connected, as well as 16 seasonal cottages. Gradually, more people have been signing up. So, while not everyone is connected yet, they all have contracts, and everyone eventually will be connected.
So the mayor is just twisting open a vat here where he's going to be showing me all of the waste products that are used in this biofuel installation. It's completely disgusting. It looks like mud, and it smells much, much worse.
Takže zápach tady je docela slušný, ale v podstatě o tom to všechno je, protože to musí nějakým způsobem se promíchat, splinovat.
The stink here is quite something, but that stench is what runs our motor. This releases the pump into the fermenter, where it's mixed at a temperature of 40 degrees, freeing up the biofuel. From there it goes to the motor, where it's basically used instead of petrol. The remaining waste can be used as liquid fertilizer in the fields.
Merkazda says that, funny smells aside, he's happy with the project so far. More than 50 visitors, including scientists, journalists, and the mayors of other towns, have come to have a look. He's gotten comfortable acting as a tour guide, but warns anyone who's thinking of installing their own biomass plant that it causes plenty of headaches.
Samozřejmě máme technické problémy, které tady jsou.
Of course, we've had our share of problems with the plant. The furnace is a prototype, and it's always getting jammed. A lot of our machinery is like that, in fact. The problems have been bigger than expected, but they're gradually being solved. We're only at the beginning. You know, a colleague of mine said this was the biggest event in Knežice since the church was built.
Given that the Church of St. Peter and Paul was founded in 1359, that's no small matter. Despite being a flyspeck on a map, Knežice has a rich history as a valuable plaything that got passed back and forth between the feuding local gentry over the centuries. Today, Knežice isn't doing so badly. It's experienced modest population growth over the last several years, and the 500 inhabitants managed to support an elementary school, a grocery store, an auto repair shop, and one tavern. I asked Josef Jansta, the owner of Hostinec nad Křižovce, or the pub at the crossing, what life is really like here.
There's a lot of good neighborliness between people here. People don't envy one another and aren't watching what their neighbor has on his plate. Sure, there are some family clans here, but we pretty much all try to help each other. Today there are only a few private farmers left in Knežice, and almost everyone drives somewhere else to work.
Local traditions like the Maj or the Maypole celebration have disappeared as the town turned into a bedroom community. And as for biomass, well, Josef Jansta says he's for it, but he hasn't managed to make the switch just yet.
I heat the pub with wood. It's what we've always done since 1920. Back then, there weren't really any particular rules for making heat.
Today, the inhabitants of Kněžice are trying to completely rewrite the rule book on heating and electricity, and a lot of people are watching to see how things turn out.
That edition of Spotlight by Ilja Maritz brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you feel like commenting on anything you've heard today, or if you've got any questions, don't hesitate to contact us. You can write a letter to Vinohradská 12, Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye and take care.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures, 7h27, 5930, 7345, Europe. 8h30, 8h57, 9860, 11600, Europe. Dix-sept heures trente, 17h57, 5930, 15710, Europe, Afrique centrale. 19h30, 19h57, 5930, 9430, Europe, Afrique. 23h, 23h27, 5930, 7345, Amérique du Nord. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.